You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 55 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I am your host, Dion Morales, and today I am joined by Chico the Aardvark Brown.
Hello, I'm glad to be on. I think this is my first time on Gold Squadron.
Welcome. Thanks, Gold Squadron. And also, El Grande, Marcel Manzano.
I have nothing to say about that.
Hey, that's that, what you put?
That's accurate.
All right, so our plan today is we're going to be fielding listener questions. We have a lot of them kind of stacked up. We put out a post on Facebook, so we're going to get through as many as we can in about an hour or so. And just kind of go all over the place. I don't think we need to put a timer on it. I think we can be disciplined enough to move on. But I think before we go on, one thing I do want to address, I don't know if you guys have seen, I know you two have seen, but people listening, currently I am accepting nominations for the inaugural 2018 Goldie Awards at Worlds. We're going to be doing a award show and giving out awards to all kinds of people. Links are all over the place on the Facebook, on Patreon, Discord, everywhere. You can find them. Where else? Reddit. Not the FFG forums yet, just because that site does weird things for me. I don't know. But anyway. Nominate.
Question about that, Dion.
Go ahead.
Who gets the award for some of these? Like, some of them are obviously directed at specific people or groups.
Right.
But some of them are like best streamed game. Who are you going to give that to?
That's going to go to the stream and both players.
Very nice. Okay.
Yeah.
That works.
That's simple. That's simple. So one thing, I know I had a couple people message me and say, hey, why didn't you use my category? Like, some people gave some, like, so for instance, somebody suggested, what is the most hated list in the meta? How am I supposed to give an award for that? Like, do I just give it to everybody who's played it ever? Do I send it to the developers for making it? Like, or do I send it to all the playtesters in the packs for the cards that are used? I don't know. Like, it's impossible to do that. But I tried to create categories where it's like a person or a set of people that could actually get it, if that makes sense.
Unlock the hologram.
All right, so I think we're gonna go right into listener questions. I'm gonna pull up the questions here, and the first one, we are starting hard right away. Wait, that sounded bad. You know what I mean? Tough question right away. Jesse Gersh asks, "What would make the U-Wing viable?"
Nothing. Next question. No, I think it's got a bit of a unique spot, and I've seen it used to success like maybe once or twice, but it always feels like the list is winning in spite of it. And I feel like the one thing that it does well is getting in and just clogging things up and causing problems. And maybe if it had some more abilities that catered towards that, but I just don't think it does at the moment. So I find it in a hard place to do those things.
Marcel?
I don't think it'll take a lot, to be honest. What's really hurting her right now compared to the other things that are out there is its health. It has probably 2 health less than what it needs to be competitive. It doesn't stay alive long enough. So if you are not going to give it, I don't know what's in the titles for it, but if you're not going to give it more health, you've got to give it something that's going to allow it to stay alive a little bit longer, because it's a good carrier. It's a 22 point carrier. So if you want to have Janerso, Janors, Sabine, or you want to carry any important crew in there, it's better than the Lambda shuttle. But again, the Lambda shuttle is at 10 health and at 1 point less. So I don't think it's that far off.
Yep, I'm with you. You actually took exactly what I was going to say right out of my mouth. So there you go, Jesse. So hopefully we'll see if the U-Wing pack with the X-Wings does something for you. And then once it comes out and we know all the cards, and hey, we'll definitely attack the U-Wing. I think that's something we have to do, right? I mean, it's such a cool model. I think it's a beautiful ship. and I would love to see it competitive. And Chico, when you've been talking about seeing it being used, I think one game that I did see, it was on Vassal, and somebody was using Dash with two of them as blockers.
Yeah, that's what last year at the CAC, Luke ran that. And had
Yep, it was Luke, I think, who might have been playing.
He did it extremely well, just super clogs up everything so that Dash can run around and do Dash things without, you know, having to worry about people coming at him, because two large base ships getting in your way, that's you're not getting around that very easy.
Exactly. We'll move on. So Marcus Thielsich asks, how do you get to day two of Worlds if this is your goal? So I think my sarcastic answer is probably however X number of wins you need. Do we know how many rounds the first day of Worlds is? Seven?
It's six and three.
Six and then three. So you have to, what, go 5-1, I'm guessing?
Well, to get round two, I assume they're going to keep it like the system open at 5-1 because you're narrowing down from three. From 3 days, not just two, and it's going to be a big list. I assume probably anywhere between 150 to 200 people a day, which would equal maybe 12 and 15 5-1s a day, and so that brings about 45 people to the following day, or they can just cap it at about, you know, a number like 20. At 20 a day, which at that point you'll get, you know, six or seven 4-2s that make it.
Yeah, have they not announced what the structure is and if it's a win loss thing? Because if it's a win loss thing, then you don't build lists to care about MOV at all. But if you do need to care about MOV, if they're taking top X, you know, that's a big difference in list building if that's, you know, the different decider between a couple lists for you.
Well, let's see if I could find it here. We have the power of the internet, right?
So the question is, what does it take to make it to day two, as in mechanically, as in like what the setup was, or is the question more of
that's the question.
Like, what do you have to do in order, like, how do you prepare to make it to day two? Or,
well, I guess for some people, they look at it and say, you know what, I think I got a strong list. I can go 5-1 or undefeated, and I got it. I'm into day two. And then some other people, you know, look at tournaments like when I go to regionals, I kind of expect to get 4-2. So I really start looking at my list from an MOV standpoint and go into each game going, okay, how do I need to preserve MOV and do this, because that's my game I'm expecting to probably lose to, so I need to have a strong MOV.
Yep, I'm here. I'm looking to see if I could find the structure for Worlds, and I'm
While you're looking for it, I can give you kind of a rundown of how I'm expecting to make day two. I plan on just not getting fired because I'm going to be a judge.
Well, look at you. You are guaranteed to make it.
Yeah, I'm guaranteed to make it all the way to the finals.
See, maybe it's in the prizes. I have no idea. No clue. I don't know. I'm sure, you know, if they have released this, I know there's at least one person who's yelling right now at their radio/headphones.
Right.
Saying, how do you guys not know?
And if they haven't, then they ought to know that they should probably get that information out pretty quick. People are going to be trying to figure this out. No,
for sure. All right. So sorry, Marcus, that's not super specific. But I think, yeah, be prepared. And once we know whether the record matters or not, I think what will probably end up happening is MOV will end up mattering for the very top cut, like that top 32. Most likely the day two, like playing on what will be Saturday, like the first three rounds, will most likely have to do with your record. So something like all 4-2s make it, or they'll do something like the best X number will make it. I think they did that last year, right?
Good Lord, if all 4-2s make it, day two is going to be brutal. That's going to be a lot of people.
A lot of people being sad. Being cut down. All right, we'll move on here. So let's see. Larry Turnbull says, I've been playing for 2 months as of tomorrow. Well, congratulations, Larry. Welcome to X-Wing. I have about 25 games under my belt. I'm 1-8 most recently, and it's super disheartening. I don't feel like I'm getting better. The only thing keeping me going is pure stubbornness. How do I keep going? So first, Larry, I lost 47 games before I won my first one. So don't feel bad. People lose. And you won. You said recently you're 1-8. Like, hey, man, you're better than I was when I started. So already a win.
If you won 47 straight losses, I think. I don't know. I think a talking dog is better than you at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
Though to be fair, like I'm gonna add a couple caveats here. My friend who taught me didn't know that the Whisper was nerfed, so I was playing like X-Wings versus pre-nerf Whisper. That was great. Not great.
So something I'll throw in there is that I lost it. It's gone.
Nope.
I've gotten on losing streaks, you know, from now and again. Not really bad losing streaks, but I've, you know, let's just say less than what my, you know, you have less than my own expectation of what I want to do, because it's relative, right? Someone might be happy going 3-3. Somebody might be happy going 1-5. Somebody, you know, if Duncan Howard goes less than 5-1 ever, he'll probably break down crying. But yeah, the way I personally deal with it is just switch my lists around. Maybe it's not the best way to get better at it, but it's the best way to keep having fun, because at the end of the day, this is still a game. So, you know, this year is a good example for that. Last year I didn't miss a cut. I think the only cut I missed was Adepticon all year last year. And this year I missed a lot of cuts, most of the cuts. And well, not at the store championship, but at regional and above. You know, I went 4-2 almost every time, and almost every time you needed a strong 4-2 or a 5-1. So I just switched up my lists and played the things that I thought were fun. So that kind of helped a little bit. It did get old. But just again, find the reason why you play. And if you're playing to have fun, just switch your lists around and continue to experiment. And maybe don't worry so much about going to tournaments and things like that. Just you know, just play at the local store and play with other people that are also playing something that, you know, if you see Fen Lothal across the board and you're not, you know, winning a lot, maybe that's not the game you should take on and say, no, I'll pass. I'll go play, you know, somebody else right now that has a list that gives you more options and more fun.
Yeah, and then looking here at some replies underneath Larry's question, he said that he's currently playing Raypo. I think that's a great starter list. I will say one thing when it comes to list optimization, Larry, you might not have all the upgrades to make it happen, like you know, like expertise and all that. There's R2-D2 for Poe. Like there are definitely some optimized versions of those of a Raypo list that might take you a little farther than what you're having right now. I know a lot of new players just kind of use what they have, and that's fine. So if you're playing against high meta list, kind of like what Marcel was talking about, and you're using an unoptimized list, that might be hurting you. I do suggest trying to, if there's a local group of players that are willing to teach you, like just saying, hey guys, I want to be better at this game, and try to find a wing to go under, you know, and see who can guide you along. We have a lot of content out there. I would highly suggest, this is going to sound like super like, hey, go watch X-Wing Mind Games. But X-Wing Mind Games, I think, is a great learning tool. to get into high level players' heads and understand their decision making. Like, hey, don't always joust because it's a bad idea. You know, things like that. Chico, sorry, I cut you off earlier.
Yeah. Well, you fed right into it. You said find an opponent that you can kind of get under their wing and stuff. I think one of the keys to really getting better in the early game is finding an opponent who is able to sit down with you like after a game and explain to you is like, hey, I really think you did this wrong. And then also being on the other side of that is like taking that criticism and wanting to build off of it. And like one of the things that I find helps people sometimes is if you go, man, I just got crushed. I think it's my list. Clearly, it's my list. Switch lists with your opponent, and have them fly. You know, whatever you know jank you put together, and fly their what you may think is an OP list, and fly it against them, and just see how they take control of your list and things like that. Another thing I would say is look into action economy. A lot of early game players are bumping a lot and they're running over asteroids and they're doing things that just ruin their action economy. And that's one thing that, you know, really messes them up. The last thing I would say is throw some rocks down onto a table, grab your maneuver templates and an A-wing and just fly in and out of the rocks and just get better at maneuvering, see how close you can get to them, fly figure eights through them and just get used to how the ships move and eyeballing things and not being terrified of the rocks.
Yep, I love that. I absolutely love that. So next one here, Ryan Staniszewski. I believe he's one of your OCX groupies, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Right? he asked, what's your underdog list archetype or dark horse pilot for Worlds? Man, I don't know if I should give that away. Like, that's some secret tech right there. He's like, Ryan's basically saying, hey, Gold Squadron, what's your secret tech?
Right.
Man. Honestly, all jokes aside, I think I've been testing with some lists with generics. Not quite swarm, but like 3-4 ship generics. I've got a similar to Marcel style lists that try to take out these more expensive point fortress ships effectively, but be able to last a little bit longer as well. Like kind of this balance between having enough damage output to kill something, but stay around long enough to do it is what I'm looking for right now. I think that's the kind of list that can surprise some people when we get to Worlds because people don't practice against those.
Well, I'm not so sure I agree with that because that seems to be the rebel niche right now. You have Stress Ezra and a whole bunch of random other things that are, you know, the like mini rebel swarm that just slams into you as hard as possible.
I know which group you're talking, like Tommy Adams list kind of thing. Like Zeb, Ezra, something else.
Well, the one I saw was the one that took second in Indy. It was a Stress Ezra, a gold Y-wing decked out with everything that Chopper can eject from it. Had just a plain rookie X-wing and one other ship. But it's just right. Like four little ships that just slam into you and you can't do anything about it.
Brandon Thayer's list.
Yes.
So while I think that list is good, I guess in my mind, I'm talking more about, I don't want to give away my tech. I'm thinking more about the other two factions. That's not an archetype you're really seeing in Scum and Imperials.
Right.
And honestly, while I do think the Force... four ship rebel junkyard type of lists do have some merit. I've seen a lot of people play that. Like I mean this in the most respectful way. I've seen a lot of people play those badly. Like they just kind of stick in their little square and refuse to break up. Like Brandon, go back. If you haven't watched those videos from Indy, go watch him play that list because he knows when to keep it in formation and when it's time to break out.
I played against him in Michigan, and he tore me apart.
Very good. He's very, very good. That's the right way to play it.
Mm-hmm.
I think something four or five ship something or another for Imperial or Scum might be something to look out for.
So my dark horse list, and I blame this on Marcel and I blame it on Ian Hamp. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more jump masters.
No, you're not.
Did you see what Ian did with four of them? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, when we went to when I went to Minneapolis and with William, and William won, there was a four Jumpmaster one that made, I think, like top 16, and it went 5-1, and then lost. Actually, both losses were to the same player, flying the cannon version of the Fen Lothal, but it was Fen Cannon. The that list, I mean, it's got a lot of beef to it, and it can block and it can do a lot of things, but it also has a lot of weaknesses. You have to get good matchups and you have to get good natural dice. But that's not a bad thing. You can win with that. If again, there's a lot of ifs in there, but if things go your way and you fly it right, you can win. The best thing that has, it has two agility, it has a lot of hull, there's a lot of shields and hull to go around, and they can clog up space, you know, better than anything else, especially with four of them. Doesn't have the tech you need in case you get a bad matchup to, you know, if you get a matchup against the Kylo, if you get a matchup against you know, a lower PS swarm, that's going to hurt you. But much like what Dion was talking about, and I don't care about giving up secrets. I'm not even part of the secrets. I'm just talking. I think that right now, with what you're seeing at the very top, you're seeing point fortresses at the very top, and you're seeing action denial and damage mitigation based on action denial. So it is a race at the top that my actions, I'm going to take my actions and I'm going to prevent you from taking your actions. And the way to counter that is to build something that doesn't care about actions. And that's where you get into ships that either, you know, let's say a good ship that doesn't care about actions as much is you know, the gunboat or the Kimojila, because they take long range scanners, so they can take those actions before they get to you. And especially the Kimojila, you can put the cybernetic contraband and just flip and still take the actions when you're stressed. So there's those type of counters to those top medalists that are flying stress, Ezra, and other things, and basically just saying you're not gonna let me take my actions. I don't care. I don't need my actions. I'm gonna roll a whole bunch of dice, and I'm gonna have a way to modify those attacks without those actions.
There you go. I like it. That contraband cybernetics is definitely, I think, a sleeper card. People have been sleeping on it.
Oh, when I flew the four of them, the four K fighters. That's the only reason I went 4-1 before losing the last one, is because I caught so many people sleeping. You know, with that K turn missile, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, love it. All right, so Gents Delstra asks, when playing into something you have never flown against, is it better to be more aggressive or conservative? Marcel, I'll let you take that one first.
All right. Sorry. So what was that one? Which one are we on?
Gents Delstra is asking, if you're playing against a list you've never seen before, should you be more aggressive or conservative?
Neither. If you're playing against a list you've never seen before, you should take a minute even before you start the match and really break down that list and try to figure out, what is this list trying to do? It's that whole turn zero thing. You're trying to figure out, what does that list want to do, and what are my strengths? What are its strengths? And sometimes the strengths, again, going back to Ezra or to, ion bombs, and things like that. If the other person's strength is to take away your actions, or bump masters, four jump masters on the other side, their strength is to clog you up and not let you do what you want to do. So that's going to determine whether you go fast or whether you play slow. Yeah, so always break down the list before you even start. Don't go in there and say, I'll figure it out. Because by the time you figure out what the other player wants to do with their list, it's a lost cause by then.
Chico?
So I look at this as like I do any other match I go against. You know, just like Marcel said, you need to look at your opponent's list and try to figure out what it's trying to do. Personally, I don't really go aggressive on a list unless I see an opportunity to jump onto a ship when it's not expecting it. Or if there's something that I really think he's going to be able to take it to time and win, I'll jump in there, try to get me as much time as I can. Otherwise, I really like to force my opponent to make a mistake before I do. So trying to like go slow, get them to break up their formation if they're running a formation by forcing them to go around the rocks or go through the rocks, heaven forbid, I think usually goes well. And if you're doing something like that a little more conservative, you can usually get a bit of a tell from them of what ships they consider to be valuable or their damage dealers or their support ships, that kind of thing. All I know is if I come up against a list that I've never seen before, if it's got a hawk in it, that thing needs to die first because it's probably a linchpin.
Oh, the hawks. Oh, I have stories about hawks. Anyway, go watch the Wisconsin regional game where I get knocked out. You'll hear the story of my hawk. Yeah, I totally agree with both of you gentlemen. Being able to analyze your opponent as they play, if you're really not familiar with maybe what they want to do. But if you are a little bit more experienced, make sure you break down the list before you start making decisions. There's no reason to rush into, your first two or three sets of dials. If that's one thing I do see people make mistakes is like, oh, I thought I had to go fast because it was the beginning. It's like, no, it's okay to take a minute to think. Because if you mess up the opening engagement, you've usually lost. And that's just the way this game works. I mean, once the snowball starts rolling down the hill, there's very little that you can do about it. Next question. We have Nikolai. Ooh, man, I'm gonna challenge Ryan Farmer here for a name butchering. Here we go. Nikolai Chaplidenko. I think I got that right. Nailed it. All right. How do I speed up, set up, and packing away of the game when I play at home? So, when you play at home, at home as opposed to at a store. I know for myself, I only ever take out what I'm going to play with, and all my ships are organized and my cards are organized in a spot. So, I know, for instance, one of our guys, Rick, I use binders because I like to be able to see everything, but he has a card stack system in boxes where he has little dividers for each of the type of upgrades and he's able to put them in and out there. I do have a box of cards that I have my most commonly used upgrades. Like if there's three or four lists that I've been cycling through lately and I'm testing through them, I'll just keep them all in one spot. That's okay. But I think being organized is probably just I know that's a really generic way to say it, but if everything has its place and you're consistently putting it back, you're going to be able to find it right away. I know one thing that is important is also what is your storage solution for X-Wing? I think everybody has to have a plan for your storage solution, whether that's, foam and bags, or you have just your ships on a shelf. I know me personally, I have my most commonly used ships on a shelf. That way, when I want to play with them, I just grab them and I put them in my, my store box, or I just grab them and put them on the table and they just put them right back on the shelf. That saves a ton of time, for me personally. Also, if you're playing at home, you don't necessarily have to use the cards. You can just print out the lists and play that way to save yourself time. Especially if you're at home because you have limited time already, you couldn't make it out of the house because maybe one of your kids are sick or something like that. You know, just print off a squad sheet and do it that way. I think that's fine, unless you of course you're really insistent on using the cards. Gentlemen, other ideas?
Well, I think for me, I have my tournament kit usually always ready. It's got my dice, my standard tokens, and stuff like that in there. But as far as building a list, you know, setting up and tearing down, I really don't have anything for making it faster because I'm one of those people that I meticulously, you know, have everything put away when it's put away. I'm not like you where I have, you know, a special set of cards, things sitting on the shelf to just pull out. I know when I'm coming into like a tournament season and I know, you know, friends of mine are going to be wanting to test against like meta lists, I'll pull out those meta lists and put them in their own little Plano container, so that when people come over, I can just say, what do you want to fly against? And, you know, if they need practice against Ghost Fen, I just pull out a box with Ghost Fen in it, poof, set it all up, and we're good to go. Other than just having some stuff like that ready, I don't really have anything. I take forever set up and tear down.
Yeah. Specifically for home, I think the own hit around in the spot, you don't have to take everything out. Just take out the ships that you're going to fly and the dials, and really that's all you need. You know, you maybe, you know, print out, even at league play, just print out your list. You don't have to take everything, just print out your list. And yeah, you'll just need a couple shield tokens and the tokens for, you know, the focus of a target lock type of things. For playing outside of the home, that's one of the things I hate. I mean, Dion, you've seen, I walk around with like this big old, you know, blue sports bag that's probably been run over by 50 cars by now. It's all beat up, but that's where I keep everything. What I actually just carry with me is a little fish tackle box, and within that fish tackle box, I usually fit 3 or sometimes 4 full lists, and I'll just take all the cards and I'll put everything into one Ziploc bag, and each Ziploc bag is my entire list. So in 4 Ziploc bags, I'll have 4, you know, completely built lists, and that way I can go and I'll, that's what I'll play for the next, you know, month or two, and I don't have to go back and clean up or take them out. I just keep the ships and the Ziploc bags with, you know, with all the cards and everything else to it in them. So that makes it easy for me. And I just carry it in the fish tackle box, and I don't worry about keeping it clean, keeping it organized. I just throw it on. I mean, you guys, if anybody's seen the stream, you guys know it goes everywhere. And it's a big mess. And people who are very neat and tidy probably have, you know, fits about it, but it makes it easy for me to, believe it or not, to stay organized. So that's stay organized and clean up quick.
Yeah. So just to kind of add on to that, when it comes to the tokens for ships, just have like either a box, like a small like screw type of box, or even a Ziploc bag where you have all those tokens. And if you're worried about speed, honestly, just take a bunch of focus, evades, target locks, and any other tokens that you use commonly, and just throw them in one Ziploc bag. That way, when you're done playing, you just shove them in the Ziploc bag as shields as well. That's the other thing we missed. And then when it's just time to play, you just pull them out. Like they're different enough in the Ziploc bag where you can just put, you know, I need to get 4 shields. You just grab them out the bag and get ready to go. I hope that helps, Nikolai. Let's see here. Ben Knotts asks for a G1A fix or buff. Marcel, any ideas there? I think it's kind of a similar issue to the U-Wing, right? Not enough health to stay on the board.
Well, I think it's more sitting in the same camp as the B-Wing right now. I mean, it's just hurting because of its niche isn't really strong right now. And it doesn't really have the tricks that the B-Wing has that it can pull out right now.
Yeah, I was muted. I was talking, and then I realized, wait, I'm muted. So I think to both of your points, there's but even the B-Wing, there's not B-Wings flying around. The only reason that B-Wings are flying around is because they cost a point less, and you can fit four of them plus one, or you know, four of them with X-Wings. There's other things that you can do with them. But let's just say change is gonna come.
Change is coming.
That's all I'm gonna say.
How do you feel about Tyler Tippett when he won his hyperspace qualifier? The list that he played against on the final match that went 5-1 on the day had Zuckuss in it. Like, mind blowing. Like,
yeah, that game was on stream.
Yeah, clearly that ship doesn't need a fix. I mean, it went that far. I'm kidding. I didn't hear any laughing. I'm kidding.
Cricket. I'm going to edit in some crickets there. yeah, I mean, I'm curious. I would be curious to go through that guy's matchups. I mean, he was basically just using him as a tractor beam caddy. What was the plan? Tractor beam plus harpoons equals dead things, if it can happen. But that matchup for him is really bad against Tyler's list.
Oh yeah.
So we're going to move down here, and I'm going to take this question first. Steve Martin out of Ohio asks, how do you deal with -/sore loser type players? So I want to give a couple caveats just kind of expand this question a little bit. I have seen people get like... Let me rewind here. It is okay to be upset at the end of a game. What is not okay is to have a negative experience with your opponent at the end of a game. So I'm going to give a perfect example. At Adepticon, Kevin Lyons, final roll, he needs to dig in one damage on a one hole Miranda. Corrin, range one, doesn't get it. He is visibly upset. Visibly upset. But he still shakes William's hand at the end of the game. Like, it's okay to be upset, but you're still a good sport. Let's say you're dealing with somebody who at the end of the game is cursing at you and or just like throwing things around and all that. Honestly, my opinion, the best course of action is to just get your stuff and get out of there. There's no reason for you to stay in a negative environment if you don't have to. And all of us playing this game where most of us are adults / you have choices. So once the game is over, you can leave. And I will say, if somebody's being aggressive or mean during a match, I know this can get awkward. I personally think it's okay to call a judge. I mean, Chico, you're here. If a person is being, I'll say, you know, threatening or violent towards me during a match, like I'm not out of line by calling a judge, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's sportsmanship clauses built in, and if it gets across a line, maybe it just needs somebody, you know, in a position of authority to say, hey, you know, you need to calm yourself and just play the game, or we're gonna have to deal with it. I've never had that happen. I've had people mention things after a game that they played against somebody who was, you know, super awful or like a super jerk, but I've never been called into the middle of a game for one, but definitely go for it. Even if it means calling over a judge for some question that you know is pointless, or some arc check that you know is way off, but you just want to get somebody over there and then just say something to them on the side so that they can just watch it, because you don't want to make the situation worse by vocalizing it. Because I know a lot of people are timid like that.
And I think the kind of like the third way this could happen is, let's say you're playing a game against a newer player and, you know, you're at a regional, it's round one, and some guy, you know, busts out his not optimized, you know, two X-Wings and a B-Wing list, and you just 100 old the guy, and you see him becoming demoralized throughout the game. You know, people are very, like, there are people who are okay with having constructive criticism at the end of the game. I do think you have to be careful not to always jump in at the end of a game and be like, I mean, you know, I think you really would have had a chance if you'd done this. Like, some people need a moment, need some time to decompress at the end of a game. So just being mindful of people's positions and understanding why they're upset, I think is also important. So three different ways to really look at that question, but they all need to be handled differently.
Yep. I'll put in a fourth way. And that's if you catch yourself being the one that's doing that, which, you know, we're all competitive and we try not to be, and we all, not all, that's a bad way of saying it. We are all competitive, and a lot of people that are competitive don't like losing. And when they're losing, they get upset, and that happens. It happens to me too. It doesn't happen very often, but it happens. And I think I've mentioned that over the past few podcasts where I, you know, I apologize to someone. Hey, sorry, I was I'm never really rude. I'm just not my normal, you know, just happy-go-lucky. Yeah, I'm visibly frustrated, and it creates a bad experience for the person I'm playing with. So if you catch yourself doing that, like I've caught myself doing that from time to time, just own up to it. And typically, you know, within you know, after the next game, find that person and, you know, just make amends and say, hey, sorry, you know, I didn't, you know, it wasn't about you. I just very competitive and I was frustrated. So if I made you feel uncomfortable or something like that, sorry. And just owning up to it goes a long way. And it also goes a long way to, you know, a lot of the friends that I've made, or actually, let me rephrase that. Everyone that I've been rude is not the right word. Everyone that I've been frustrated while playing a game with has ultimately become a friend. So you know, you can always flip that. So that, again, on the flip side, if you're the one that's kind of on tilt a little bit, just recognize it, own up to it, and just you know, try to make it right.
Next question comes from Blake Anthony Garcia. He asks, what did y'all think about the Silencer taking the top table at Birmingham? So this was in the UK. He says he was super hyped and he loves that ship. Sorry if we talked about it already. We haven't talked about it. And I want to say, I mean, as I have been playing Kylo, I am 100 plus games deep into playing Kylo. And I was ecstatic. I thought, you know, the player whose name is escaping me right now did great work. He took he had quick draw Kylo and the FO that is pilot skill 12 until he takes damage. I think that's Epsilon Ace. Is that right? Crickets?
Yeah.
Crickets? Epsilon Ace? Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
It.
And I mean, pretty simple. What did you think? I thought it was great. It was really cool. Some people, you know, were funny and said, you know, you should have just not even brought Epsilon Ace. But I'd be interested to talk to the winner and see how big of an impact that ship made. Because I could see this, even though it's just a TIE fighter, if you ignore it, then you just, you know, you get into range one and start doing some work there. But if you kill it, you've only taken, you know, minimal amount of points out of the list. So, yeah, I mean, great strategy, and congrats to the winner over there.
Yeah, and I'd almost expand it into the entire top eight of Birmingham. Like, there were a lot of Imperial lists on there, and I know a lot of Imperial players have gotten, you know, a little downtrodden by the fact that the Rebels have been, like, controlling the top, you know, fairly strong for the past little while. Imperials, you know, every once in a while, there's, you know, a couple that are doing really well, and Scummer still seem to be hurting quite a bit, but, you know, having a silencer in the top doesn't really surprise me. I mean, it's a dang good ship, and in the right hands, it can do extremely well. But you know, having a lot of Imperials having success like that is really cool.
Yeah, it was Martin Chivers, by the way. Congratulations to for winning the system open over there. And also something, there was quite a few like different lists in there. You also had Jesper Hills with his control bots. I will say I have practiced against control bots. Oh my God. Oh, feels bad. Cause once they have you, there's nothing you can do.
Well, yeah, that's one of those lists that if you haven't really thought about it, it like you are not prepared for it like at all. And I had one person at Adepticon that was flying it, and I think I got called over once every round to his table to explain something about ions. It's like, no, you're not revealing a dial, so you don't get to do that. People just going, but my things don't work now.
Exactly. Chris Maka asks, is there anything currently in the game that you consider OP or that needs adjustments? Oh, buddy, that is a loaded question, Chris Maka. So how about this? I'm pulling back the reins.
I don't want to touch it.
Oh, my God.
You are allowed. I'm going to give us each one thing. You could one thing.
Okay.
One thing, okay? You do not have to say how to adjust it, but simply, you know, just what it is. How about that?
Twin laser turret.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. So Marcel says twin laser turret. Chico.
From a judge point of view and a player point of view, harpoons are just too complicated. I'd rather them be simplified.
And mine's going to be. There's a couple. Regen. I'm going after regen. Regen. Yes. There it is. We could go. Chris.
That's a whole episode.
That's a whole episode.
But that's probably a whole episode better not recorded, to be honest. Give that one to, you know, one of the other podcasts that probably can give it more justice. It's just not our typical style. So
yeah, I mean, I get it. Yes, we don't like to be negative. I mean, we of course have bad feels about things, but if we find a constructive way to put it together, we'll do it. But those are the things, Chris. We'll move on. Let's see. Luke Shepherd asks, for a mid level player, I still find it hard to understand how. How to combine a list to break the meta, especially as a scum player. So I guess, what are the key points to look at when trying to break the meta? So I'm going to jump on this one first. I think it depends on what you mean by break the meta. Like if you want to just be, I'm going to call it just being competitive, because I think we're at a point where there are so many ships and upgrades, and in a tournament setting, the matchups can vary quite a bit. So for instance, in the system open, at Adepticon, I played against three in the Swiss out of the six rounds. I played against three Ghost Fen lists, three of them, where I had friends who didn't play against any ghosts. You know, it can vary quite a bit. As a scum player, I think we've talked about this quite a bit. Asajj plus something else that's good is pretty much your wheelhouse for basic how to build a scum list right now. You could also go with high PS ordnance with the Kimogilas. I mean, they, you know, you take Dalin, Tarani, Nim, very similar to the runner up at the Michigan regional. Like that's a nasty list. All PS9s and 10s with harpoon missiles. That hits pretty hard. What to look at? I mean, if you're trying to break down the meta, you need to try to find some pattern, or what do the top squads have in common, and find what beats all of those things. I know that's a really generic way, like, because right now we're trying to figure that out ourselves. Like, I've been poring over data and lists and trying to figure out what is the right choice to fly for Worlds. coming up here in 4 or 5 weeks, and there's a lot of choices to be made.
Yeah, I agree. There's looking at the meta and saying I'm gonna break it. That's kind of what I did for Michigan. And I specifically looked at like one or two lists, and I was like, I want to beat this. I have a hard time against those, and I'm just going to make sure if I come against them, I'm going to crush them. And I succeeded. You know, I had a list that just trounced Ghost Fen, and I probably ruined that guy's shot. I didn't win a lot of my other games, but I ruined that guy's day. And, you know, that super felt good, but my list wasn't really competitive. You know, like you said, you know, if you're wanting to build a competitive list, you got to make sure that you build something that has, you know, you look at the meta and say, okay, I can beat most of these things, and these other things I don't super lose against. You know, maybe there's like one list that's out there is like, well, that's going to be my Achilles heel, that's going to be an uphill battle. But you know, that's really hard to, you know, especially for some of these players that, you know, want to build their own list. It's going to be super hard to do. But, you know, looking at out there at some of the scum lists that are really doing really well right now, and, you know, seeing if it fits your play style and going for that, you know, there's a couple of them out there that are having good success. You know, take a look and see what works for you.
Go ahead, Marcel.
Good. Yeah, sorry, this mute button is I have a cough, so that's why I'm muted the majority of the time. The I don't really think there's anything that is known that can break the meta with scum right now. And what I mean by that is that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means the specific combination hasn't been put together. Right now, the closest thing that you would take breaking the meta or doing something that kind of took things by storm is the combination of Lorik Ezra plus one. It's the combination of the Lothal and Fen, or the VCX and Fen. I'll actually, because you know, you can build it out different ways, and the combination of TLT, Ezra, and Maul. So those different combinations are quote unquote unbroken or broken. There isn't that combination found yet in scum. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So if you're trying to find something that you know breaks, I see a lot of people throw that word around, you know, it's broken, it's broken, it's broken. If you want to see something that's broken, I would probably suggest looking, you know, Maul is also available for the scum. Zuckuss, if you find a way to make Zuckuss work in a consistent way, that's a possibility. Mind Link, you know, there's certain combinations with Mind Link, Pelop, Guri that can really, you know, make some havoc, and other cards that are you probably don't even know. Operation Specialist is one that I've been playing with, and I got that actually from Richard White. But you know, the short answer is there is nothing in the scum that you can point to saying, oh, that, you know, you break it this way. But the scum have enough tools, you know, Jabba the Hutt. Maybe there's something with Jabba the Hutt that and Jabba the Hutt and Contraband Cybernetics. Now everybody's K turning five times, whatever. I mean, that's the way you have to think if you want to break something.
Yep. And then, I mean, and in order to know whether you did it or not, you have to test it. And the best way to test it is in tournaments. And so you don't know if you've done it till you've done it. or you need to have a varied testing group, because I think one trap that a lot of people fall into is if you practice only with like one or two people, and of course I'm talking competitively, if you're practicing only with like the same people over and over again, like one or two, and you're not varying your practice, you might be getting false data on your list. So make sure to have as many data points as possible before trying to come to a conclusion.
Yeah, definitely. Because how often do we end up playing the player instead of the list? So I know I play against Luke constantly, and you know, like no matter what list he puts on the table, you know, I know that, you know, that this is my style, this is his style, and you know, we know what each other do, and that's how we're going to play against each other.
Yep. Absolutely. Like, I think if there was a way to play X-Wing where you couldn't see your opponent, but you like saw all the, like all the, I'm not talking about like Vassal, but like if you could see like the person moving the templates and what they did on the table and their ships, you could probably figure out from your play group who it is. Like I just like the mannerisms and the way that they like to approach all those things. People have their tells for sure. Let's see, that one's similar to an earlier question. I don't have a name on this one, unfortunately, but I think it's a good question. And I think we'll be wrapping up with two more here, this one and one more. So what are some good strategies for adequately predicting higher pilot skill maneuvers and constraining an ace while maneuvering at low PS? Marcel, I think this is right in your wheelhouse. I'll let you start.
That's to read it one more time, because that's, I can't find you on the list. I'm probably on the wrong document.
You are. It's on our notes.
Here. All right. You're highlighting it now. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Good strategies for adequately predicting higher PS maneuvers. And so this is the biggest one, honestly, is tech, right? That's where I say that, you know, the four jump masters you have to have, you know, there's a lot of, you know, guessing that goes on and stuff like that. So one of the ways is just to tech against it with either Cassius, or an Intel agent. But barring those cards, really, it's not about guessing what the opponent is going to do. If you're trying to guess what the opponent is going to do, you already lost, because you're playing the opponent's game. You're not playing your game. So what is most important is where am I going to put myself, that if the higher pilot skill opponent wants to shoot at me, he's going to have to eat something in return. And if he wants to avoid the arc, because that's what higher pilot skill ships do, he's going to have to give up either, he's going to have to switch targets. That, you know, that's how you control target priority. Target selection is, if you want to continue shooting against a ship that's already damaged, I'm going to put these other ships to really put a pounding on you and make you, you know, to, if you're going to chase that. So really it's about playing your game and not playing the opponent's game. So don't try to predict what the opponent's going to do. Try to force the opponent to make bad decisions. And if he makes the right decision is usually you're not getting hurt either. You're not getting shot at either.
All right, I'll definitely agree with that, but I'll follow up with that by doing what you told me not to do and give you a way that I predict my opponent's maneuvers. Now, I don't necessarily try to predict exactly what they're going to do, but I will look at a maneuver that I think I want to do, and then I'll look at the opponent's ship and say, what are all the maneuvers they could do that would give them a really good position against that? And if I find that I come up with like a lot of maneuvers or one maneuver that's just like inherently obvious, I'm like, you know what? I can't do that, because, you know, he might do that. And if I start looking at a lot of my maneuvers and there's a maneuver that my opponent could do to like counter all of them, and it's like, That's probably the best maneuver for him, because it gives him the best position in my array of maneuvers. So I need to try to stop that. And that's a way that, you know, if you know where that position is, throw a blocker into that spot, and then you're getting them into that position of like Marcel said, that either they went for that maneuver of, you know, what what countered, you know, most of your stuff the best and you caught them, or they went for the best safe strategy and, you know, bailed a ship out, and then you're not getting shot.
Yep. And I think another way that I look at it is just a very basic idea of cover fire. If you have a ship that's pinned down, very similar to what Marcel was saying earlier, you want to punish your opponent's ships for going after the obvious target. And just put yourself in position to do that with low PS. We also talked about a little bit earlier about people flying in block formations. Block formations are great when you have everything in front of you, but once the battle starts to spread out, if you're just letting an opponent just stay on the side or the back of you and just start plinking away, you're going to lose that game if you stay in the block formation. So you have to make decisions with your lower PS ships and start spreading out the arcs and making it so that something like an ace with high agility but low hit points has less safe places to be. Like when I fly Kylo, and I mean, again, this is giving away a little bit, but when I fly Kylo, if I see somebody in block formations and I see that they're not breaking up, I am not sweating this game at all. It's like, all right, I'm just going to get behind you. You're going to have your little block formation and I'm going to win the game because you're never going to break it. Or by the time you figure out you should, it's going to be too late. Spread out the arcs. Make sure that you have multiple opportunities to catch your opponent's ships.
Yep. And I think you guys got it on video, but a good match to probably look at somebody who does this really well, a low pilot skill ships. Of course, you're going to look at Blair Bunky and stuff like that. He's a master at those. But one unique one was at the Chicago Regional. There was two sympathizers, two YT-1300s. And the way that he was able to give you a target, let you start on it, bail with it, and punish you, give you the other one, target that's a little bit more defensive, and basically create a situation where you're chasing one that is hard to catch up while you're getting punished by the other one, or you're switching targets, and now you're the one that's hurt is plucking away and still doing a little bit of damage while you're trying to eat at a completely new, healthy YT-1300 that has, you know, a bunch of defensive upgrades. So that's a really good example of somebody who took a low pilot skill list, not really trying to predict where the opponent's maneuvers are going to be and, you know, where to block, but he's trying to predict the opponent's, or he's not trying to predict, that's the wrong way of saying it. He's trying to force the opponent's target selection. So again, make the opponent play your game, not try to prevent the opponent from playing theirs, is my personal approach.
I like it. I like it. Our last question of the evening is going to be, how should I spend my time at Worlds when I'm not playing? So let's talk. I'll start. Let's say you're playing on Wednesday. You got Wednesday, you got Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Everybody, there's going to be a lot of people there. You have to understand that not everybody's going to make the cut. You have to go with the intention, I think, of having a good time. Do the best you can. But some of the greatest memories you're going to have from Worlds is going to be not when you're playing. It's going to be going to dinner with people afterwards, hanging out, the conversations you get to have, casual games you play on the side, not X-Wing that you play on the side. Loop and Chewie was a big hit last year. Just people just hanging out, having fun. If you're not going with your normal group of friends, don't be afraid to just befriend, you know, the people around and say, hey, you guys want to grab something to eat? Most people who play this game are friendly. And if you're unsure, you know, hit us up. You know, we have plenty of people, for instance, at Adepticon. We had new faces that we had never met before. We were like, hey, do you want to go out to dinner with us? We're about to go. Like, yeah. And, you know, we had like 20-something people go get pizza and all this. Like, it's okay to be, to hang out with people you don't know, because that's how you get to know people. is by hanging out, and just make the connections. That's probably my biggest tip there.
I don't think I can add anything to that. I mean, that's really it. Just find. I would even suggest not taking every opportunity to play X-Wing. If on a couple of those days they're going to have hangar bays and other things, you know, take time off on a couple of those and just hang on and talk to people. Go in and look at the matches that are going on, at the actual tournament matches that are going on, and just you know, other people around those matches will, you know, just spark conversation with them. Don't spark it too close if you're talking about the game, because you know, that might not be great.
You should totally do a two bank right here. Oh,
yeah. No, exactly. No, don't do that.
But, but definitely approach anyone. Everyone's approachable. Almost everyone's approachable there. And if you find someone who's not, well, congratulations, because you probably found the one person who isn't. So yeah, just approach someone, and if you're going there on your by yourself, or just like one, if it's, let's say it's only two or three of you guys, don't go eat together with just three of you. Find a group and make new friends, and make that group of three a group of 30, and just party.
Yeah, I'll definitely agree. I think my first time going to Worlds, I was able to latch on to Grasser. Like I know Grasser, you know, he's connected with all the people, and he's always setting up going out to eat afterwards. So I was able to send him a message going, hey, I've got nothing to do. I need somebody to hang out with. And he pulled me in, and you just start meeting people by going out to these little excursions, or even while you're in the convention center, but between games, if you see somebody from one of these squadrons that you know likes to talk to people or has a podcast, I mean, anybody in a crate shirt, be careful, but they're probably fun to talk to. Anybody in a gold squadron shirt, I'm sure would, you know, love to talk to somebody. I mean, we're these internet personalities, and we do this stuff for the fans. So meeting somebody is awesome. And, you know, if somebody came up to me and said, hey, you know, it's awesome meeting you. I heard you on the podcast. You're great. Hey, I'm new to this. I'm kind of here alone. I would love to, you know, find a group to go out to eat with. I would be like, hell yeah. You know, find me later. Give me your phone number. Find me on Facebook. Let's, you know, let's get together. You can come join our group. I would definitely include somebody like that. So do not hesitate to, you know, come up and say hi to one of us. I'd love to talk to somebody like that.
There you go. So I'm looking forward to the good times and the memories at Worlds Friday night. Of Worlds, I think that is the fourth. We're going to be doing the Goldies live, and anybody who can, pretty much, we're planning on packing the room. If you want to come, just come. It'll be a good time. We'll have food and drink and shenanigans. It's going to be a good time. But Chico, thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Yeah, it's been a great time. I can't wait to see you guys at the next event. I don't know if you guys are coming to CAC. I'll see you there. Otherwise, I think the next event for me is Worlds, and I'll definitely see you guys there.
Yeah, I unfortunately cannot make the CAC. It's the same weekend as my wife's birthday, so that's a no-go for me.
Right.
You're going to the one in Indiana, right?
Yeah, I will be judging at South Bend. Big surprise, I'm judging.
All right.
Marcel, you're going to go win the CAC again?
I'm going to try to repeat. Yeah, I'll do my best.
All right. Well, everyone, if you want to watch live X-Wing events and content, you can feel free to go to twitch.tv/Gold Squadron Podcast. Our next upcoming broadcast will be our Wednesday night league nights / X-Wing Mind Games recording sessions, depending on what's going on that day. You can watch all of our replays on YouTube. Just look up Gold Squadron Podcast. And lastly, if you enjoy the show and you want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag, go to patreon.com/Gold Squadron. Thank you to everyone who has supported us through Twitch Prime, the GoldSquadronPodcast.com, and through Patreon. You guys are the ones that really make this happen. We love you. Thank you so much. So for Marcel and for Chico, my name's Dion. Gold Squadron, out.